final case of the day, United States against Stewart. Mr. Stevens.
Thank you, Your Honor. Patrick Stewart rightly or wrongly believed he'd been wronged by the union, and over a course of many years tried to take action to remedy what he believed was wrong. In the course of that, he made a number of telephone calls threatening people, and ultimately this resulted in a federal prosecution. He was convicted. He was sentenced. Chief Judge Miller departed upward on both the offense level and the criminal history score, and we're here on three issues. First, the denial of a requested jury instruction. Second, the upward departure on the offense levels. And third, the upward departure on the criminal history. I had requested at the conclusion of the trial a jury instruction based on the Ninth Circuit case of Twine, which is cited in the brief, asking the court for an instruction that included as an element of the offense the intent to threaten. The prosecution was brought under 18 United States Code Section 875C. This circuit has addressed a similar statute, 18 U.S.C. Section 876, and in the Hoffman, Schneider, and Amon cases has held that statute, which is similar to 875, does not require the proof of intent or intent to threaten.
What does intent to threaten mean concretely?
Judge, if I called up my golfing buddy and I told him, Joe, you're down in Florida there. Last time I was down there, we played, and you stole that last round from me. I'm going to have to take you out to the fan hole at the 18th tee, pound you into the ground, and lop your head off with my driver. FBI agent is sitting there on the speakerphone, and he says, my goodness, he's just threatened you. We're going to have to bring a prosecution under 875C.
I don't know what role intent would play. The court would ask the question whether that was a true threat within the meaning of Rogers and Watts. And if you say this is your golfing buddy and you know you talk like that to your golfing buddy, it wouldn't be a true threat under Watts. I mean, my question is what does intent to threaten add to or subtract from or differ in some way from the inquiry whether the statement is a true threat?
Well, Twine, Your Honor, broke down the issue into the issues of whether there was a strict liability. Clearly, there's not a strict liability under this statute. Whether it was a specific intent crime, and thirdly, whether there was, in fact, a requirement of a showing of an actual intent as opposed to an objective standard. A true threat, we're looking at things from an objective standard. A jury is going to look at the facts of the case. They're going to look at the nature of the threat. They're going to look at the circumstances surrounding the threat, and they're going to determine whether a reasonable person would perceive that to be a threat.
Exactly. So if somebody on an airplane says, I have a bomb, I'm going to blow it up, or there's a bomb in my shoe, that would be, I take it, a true threat under Watt. And your position is that if he subjectively didn't mean it, he couldn't be prosecuted?
I don't think I'm willing to go quite, or I'm asking the court to go quite that far.
Then I don't know what intent to threaten is. If the defendant in that case says, I didn't intend to threaten, I just intended to make a bad joke. But in fact, I postponed the flight and mobilized 1,000 law enforcement people. But, you know, my subjective intent was just to play a bad joke. It seems to me that's a paradigm kind of case in which a prosecution is warranted. The person intended to make the threat, right? He knew bomb threats on airplanes are generally bad. I can't see why one would want a separate override allowing somebody to cause that much inconvenience to others and then say, in Emily Latella's Defoe's phrase, never mind.
I understand what the court is getting at, Your Honor. And the individual that you've described not only intended to communicate the words that were communicated, but he intended to communicate the common meaning of those words. And I think that's sufficient for an intent to threaten. Did he intend to communicate the common meaning of those words? Words can...
Then I don't understand what the difference is between this and the simple inquiry into true threat.
Where the
I don't understand how your client could possibly benefit from it. After you've called up 100 people over months and months and threatened to blow their heads off and the like, one might come to the conclusion that he understands what words like, kill you all mean.
Well, let me go specifically to the threats in this case, Your Honor, because there were only two threats charged. He made a number of threats, and conceitedly, most of those threats would, under any definition, be made with the intent to threaten, and they were true threats. One threat in this case, for instance, though, there was some dispute about what he said, and it was a dispute that the jury did not have to resolve because they didn't have to go to the issue of intent. What one witness said was, he said, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, I don't have the precise words in front of me, but let me try to give a meaning to it. He said, tell Patty Bo that I need to, that I'm going to be praying to God before he kills her. In the context of the way the witness testified, it could be interpreted as either meaning Patrick Stewart was going to kill her or God was going to kill her. And there's a difference in whether that's a threat by the individual or whether this is some cosmological threat.
Yeah, but I guess I'm just not following. What role does that have in intent? Right? If you call up the Secret Service and say, I am confident that God will strike down the president, it would not be viewed as a true threat. It just wouldn't be covered. There's nothing intent does.
Well, Your Honor, since I'm running short on time, let me move on to the other point.
Okay.
If I have time, I'll try to get back to that, but I have a couple other points that I need to cover. With regard to the offense level, the court started a base offense level 12 under 2A6.1, added additional points for more than one threat, which is also provided under 2A6.1, added 2 points for obstruction of justice. The court found that was appropriate. And then we get to the issue of 5 levels that the court added for fact that multiple witnesses or multiple victims were threatened and multiple threats were made. The court adopted a methodology that said there are 5 distinct groups that are involved, so each one should get one level of adjustment. The local union was threatened because he wanted his job back. The Washington office of the union was threatened because he wanted his job back. The FBI was threatened because he wanted his job back and they wouldn't investigate. The people at the pension fund were threatened because he was said, I'm entitled to my job, so I'm entitled to my pension. I have no issue with the court using its discretion to say that all 4 of those groups are groups that warrant an upward departure. The application note, though, to 2A6.1, application note 2, requires that there be a substantial and direct connection to the offense itself when you're looking at prior conduct. There was a 5th finding by the court that there was a threat to the Board of Realtors that he was going to blow up his former house. Had absolutely nothing to do with any of the threats that were made to anyone involved with any of the pension investigation. Our position is that simply runs afoul of Application Note 2 because it's not substantially related to the offense of conviction. So the offense level should have been a 20 instead of a 21. The criminal history is even more difficult because Patrick Stewart had 0 criminal history points. He was in a criminal history 1 with no points. The judge, after taking testimony at the sentencing, says, I think he's more like a 4. I have little to go on except what I have seen come through the court in the last 17 years or so I've been doing this. And it's my belief and finding that the risk that Mr. Stewart will commit other crimes is equivalent to the likelihood of, and he goes on to talk about, put him in a criminal history 4. Judges don't have that kind of discretion under the sentencing guideline. Judge Miller is a fine judge. He's had 17 years of distinguished service, but Congress has said We've got the guidelines. Departures from the guidelines should be justified. Why not a criminal history 2? Judge Miller didn't explain. Why not a criminal history 3? Judge Miller didn't explain. Simply based on his experience on the bench.
And the fact that the defendant, in addition to being unrepentant, says that as soon as he gets out, he is going to go right back to doing this. That does seem, when the defendant stands up in court and says, I'm going to go right on, that tells you he has a higher than normal probability of recidivism, doesn't he?
It does, Your Honor.
I'm surprised the district court didn't choose level 6.
But I'm equally surprised he didn't choose a level 2. He simply didn't tell us why he didn't choose something other than a 1 or a 4. And I think he owes the defendant, he owes this court an explanation as to how he got from a 1 to a 4 and avoided the intervening. The discretion of a judge, no matter how many years he has on the bench, was taken away by Congress, and the sentencing guidelines now require that he enter specific findings in order to depart from the prescribed sentencing guidelines. I believe I'm out of time. Yes. If there are no further questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stevens. Mr. Baker.
May it please the Court, I'm Andrew Baker, Assistant United States Attorney on behalf of the government. I believe the court's precedents adequately address the issue of intent to lack of necessity of an instruction for intent to threaten under the statute.
Has any other court of appeals followed the Ninth Circuit in this respect?
Not that I could see, Your Honor. I just some
so
specifically
it's
rejected
situation.
It on the grounds that it added nothing and that innocence was protected by the instruction about determining that it was a true threat. With respect to the departure for offense level, it was an encouraged departure. It was reasonable and based on facts that showed the crime was related to his offense of conviction. The defendant's own testimony indicated he saw a single unitary conspiracy of the they against him that was spread from dispute with his girlfriend to the union activity, to the police department, to their assault on him, and to the FBI, the pension fund, and all the other things were related in one giant conspiracy. His anger with the FBI was not only with their investigation of his offense, but their failure to investigate his claim of fraud in relationship to the house, the same subject matter that led to the threat against the Board of Realtors. So accordingly, we believe that it met the requirements that be directly and closely connected to the offense of conviction. With respect to the criminal history category, this defendant was uniquely committed to his course of criminal conduct, virtually through his testimony assuring the court he would commit the crime. He had committed the crime, an offense, by mailing the letter to the residents of the house after he had been convicted while he was incarcerated pending sentencing. The court conclusion that it was virtually certain that he would commit a further crime was abundantly supported by the evidence. And in deciding that his likelihood of conviction of committing further crimes was equal to that of a defendant in Category 4, implicitly rejects that it's...
That's my problem. We don't think somebody in Category 4 is absolutely certain to resume a life of crime. Indeed, even Category 6 isn't absolutely certain.
But it... True. I suppose there is some outside improbable chance that he could change, but he certainly has a likelihood of committing the crime beyond the usual defendant in the heartland in criminal history category 0. And this court found that by finding that it was equal to 4, implicitly rejected the finding that it was equal to those in category 2 and 3. It's a difficult matter to quantify because
because he didn't say.
The offense level.
That's the problem. He didn't say. He didn't say why. You know. I mean, that's the problem. I see you struggling with how to deal with it, but he never said it, and that's what we.
The only thing he did. The only said. The only thing he saw was to say that the people he saw in Category 4 had equally assured him that, as a category, that they would commit further crimes to the degree this one did.
Would the result be different if we sent it back for resentencing?
If this court does, I'd be very anxious to see how one should categorize, break this into the categories where someone has such an outside the heartland devotion, dedication to committing this course of conduct, to testifying he had a virtual right to do this. I don't, it clearly is out of the heartland for the first category, and it's beyond, clearly beyond a normal defendant for the others. So I don't see.
If this were a bicycling race, this would be put down as an HC or a category beyond all possible categorization.
That's why I think you could say that there's no one ever before the court had expressed this assurance that this guy would have, and he would have, and could have said six. But he said four. That can't be wrong in the prejudice of the defendant. So, accordingly, we believe the court was proper, and it should be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.